Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 310. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Happy springtime. Not.
And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Buenos dias.
And our buddy Phil Wilson is out doing lawn care or something. I have no idea what he's doing
traveling,
today. He's
traveling somewhere.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He's spreading manure.
Well, you know, now that he's a big deal operations guy at BuzzFeed.
I know.
You know, he's hobnobbing with the greats, and he's going to leave us behind, never to speak to us again. No, I'm kidding.
He'll make a few appearances here and there, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, he'll hang with Julio, because Julio, you're press.
Consolation prize, yeah.
He'll be all over you. Hey, I had no idea until I saw your photo, Julio, that this Ignite Minneapolis gets that kind of an audience. Wow.
Yeah, and yeah.
How was it?
It was great. Ignite Minneapolis, which is that fun event, which has a whole series of 5-minute lightning talks on every topic under the sun. It's just, it's got to be the most enjoyable local. The Twin Cities has so many interesting local events. And this has to be the most enjoyable one because you just kind of sit back and learn about all kinds of stuff in these 5-minute talks. It's not a lot of fun for the speakers because they don't have control of the deck, so it's very structured.
Yeah.
And if you don't practice, you can fall flat on your face. I gave an Ignite talk once, and I'm not kidding. It was literally the most frightening experience of my entire life. But if you're not a speaker, if you're just in the audience, it's so much fun, and there's surly beer, and you bump into people you know. And it was at the Riverview Theater, which is a perfect venue for it. The weather was nice. It was a really good time.
Well, the talks are sort of like TED Talks, kind of.
They're like TED Talks, but not so highfalutin.
Not 20 minutes.
TED Talks for the everyman, and on topics that can be lofty, can be funny, can be stupid, can be trivial. My talk was about the AeroPress, a coffee maker. That sort of gives you an idea of what to expect. And I just talked about my favorite coffee maker, and didn't die, and it was great.
Well, I remember watching that. That's from a year or so ago, right?
2012, I believe.
So, and I thought you did a good job. You didn't look nervous.
I used to be really scared of public speaking, and I sort of got over it by doing it a lot. But this was several orders of magnitude more scary. So you can't tell, but I literally, as I was walking up to the stage, I literally wanted to die. I wanted the ground to swallow me up. But then I got up there, and I had practiced a lot. I got up there, and it was like I pushed a button, and I just kind of went, and it was great.
So I wanted to see Erica Hanna's one about her hair. Coloring hair. Was it really good?
It was good. It was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Are the videos going to be up at some point?
Yeah. They always post the videos, you know, several weeks hence as individual YouTube videos. So it's a lot of fun to go back into the Minneapolis archive and watch old talks. And you can see the tech improving because of the first Ignite, the projection screen was kind of small. And every year it gets bigger and bigger. We're going to get to the point where it's going to be like Apple Keynote quality, but it's great.
And this is this a national thing?
It's sort of a franchise. It's sort of like social media breakfast. People in different cities have rights to the brand name, and they sort of franchise it, and they kind of run. Patrick Kunz, the local organizer, has done a very, very good job with it. It's got to be one of the finest Ignite franchises in the country because he always pulls it off flawlessly. And as it grows in popularity, he sort of changed venues. And I'm not sure where he goes from here because the Riverview was packed, and he might have to think about the Ordway or something. But it's the tickets sell out instantly. It's something that people really look forward to because it's a very relaxed event. You have your beer, you have something to munch on, and then you're just kind of sitting back and listening to every imaginable topic under the sun. It was fantastic. My favorite talk from this year was this guy who thought he was sending an email to a female friend, and he got the domain name wrong and ended up emailing this woman from Minnesota. He was in San Francisco and emailed this woman, and they embarked on this epic, you know, 5-year email conversation that then segued into texting, that then segued into a face-to-face meeting. And he eventually married the woman. So it was kind of a,
Story.
I sort of gave away the punchline. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's but, okay. That's a great story.
I'm a romantic. I love the Sex and the City movies. I'm a romantic. So I just ate the stuff up. It was great.
Oh, that sounds good. That's awesome.
Who needs online dating when you got email, man?
Yeah. Just throw it out there.
It was basically you've got mail too. They got to make a movie out of that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny about that, in all seriousness, is that I could just see somebody contacting him, trying to buy rights to the story. That's exactly the kind of thing that would make a fabulous movie.
And the one funny nerdy part of it was he threw up the actual texts that were exchanged, and this was so long ago that the archaic appearance of the little text windows was very, very funny.
That's great.
Anybody can give Ignite Talk, and I highly recommend you do it at least once. It's kind of a bucket list item. I'm not sure I'll ever work up the nerve to do it again, but I'm glad I did it once.
Well, I really liked your article about Relo shifts you from Android to iOS, and about Jamf software. Those who don't know Jamf, JAMF. They're a Minneapolis company. They're down on Washington Avenue in downtown Minneapolis, and they do a lot of iOS and Macintosh management software. So
yeah, they have
high level deployments and all that.
But yeah, they started with Casper, which is for very large organizations that want to manage fleets with Macs and iOS devices. It's very enterprise level. But then they recently came out with Bushel, which is the same product, but it's not server-based. It's web-based, and it's for small organizations that just need an easy-to-use tool to manage their smaller fleets of Apple devices, and it's great. And then Relo is this free software utility with an app for Android and an app for iOS, and it's for people that want to migrate their contacts, photos, videos, and apps from an Android device to an iOS device.
Mm-hmm.
And I go ahead.
Do they have any plans to reverse it too, so you can go the other way from iOS to Android?
I highly doubt it, because Jamf is all about glorifying the Apple ecosystem. So it makes sense in one direction. It makes absolutely no sense for Jamf in the opposite direction. But I took it for a spin a couple of times, and my stuff migrated pretty well. The context has migrated. Photos didn't migrate so well, but I think that's because I had my iCloud photo library set on thumbnail mode, where the photos weren't actually on the phone, so only a few photos migrated. And then apps obviously don't migrate because they're apples and oranges, but what Relo does do is it analyzes what's in your Android phone, and then it throws up a screen suggesting what the iOS alternatives are. You can just download from there. So it's a little tricky, and it doesn't work exactly as you expect, but the product so far seems to be working flawlessly, and it will be a big help for people that are moving from Android to iOS, even though it doesn't migrate everything. It's kind of selective, but it does work very well.
Well, there was a bunch of articles that came out early part of this year about iPhone or Android users switching to iPhone 6. And did we ever see any quantified numbers on that?
I don't think so.
Anybody see anything? Yeah. So it was anecdotal, really.
Yeah, and there is movement in the opposite direction. People do move from iPhone to Android for a variety of reasons, partly because the Android ecosystem has finally, in my view, caught up with Apple. It's different. It's not the same, but it's every bit as good as iOS. And so there are very good reasons for many people to go from Apple to Android. So the traffic moves in both directions. I'm not sure which is the biggest movement of the two, but it does happen both ways. At this point, Apple has some pretty stiff competition in Android.
Hmm. Well, in the rumors surrounding what people are saying is will be the iPhone 7 this fall is all about the company that Apple bought with that camera technology that will allow multi-sensor capture of photons, and apparently low light photography will be significantly enhanced and yada, yada, yada. And it's just interesting to see some of these kinds of developments, because will there be a killer feature that gets people to switch one way or the other? I mean, will Android have a killer feature at some point where people will say on the iPhone, oh my gosh, I got to have that, and start to switch? And then vice versa, will there be something at the hardware level that will substantially shift people from one platform to the other?
Well, I think it's more of a philosophical thing.
Do you really?
Yeah. I do. I'll let Julio go, though.
No, I was going to say, I think the primary reason by far that somebody would up to now switch from Android to iPhone is the iPhone camera. The camera has been superior. That is starting to no longer be the case. Like the camera in the Galaxy S6 is every bit as good as the one in the iPhone, which is why, going back to the news announcement Steve mentioned, Apple is scrambling, you know, to find technology, because we're at the point where the pixel count race is basically kind of petering out. So any improvements in smartphone camera technology will be on the hardware level. And so that announcement bodes well for iPhone photo technology, although we're probably not going to see that in the next generation of the iPhone, because that's going to be probably the 6S with the same body and just marginal improvement. So we're looking at probably 2 years down the road, but that bodes very well for iPhone photography.
Yeah. Well, so I got a question for you guys. Did you ever, either yourself, of course you would never admit to it, or did you have somebody that you knew who got into a filing cabinet with tests in it, or something like that? I mean, when I was in a fraternity in college, we had a test file in the library, and that test file had like the psychology test had a pool of questions that was like 10,000 questions. And we had all these tests going back for years, and all the tests were, the same sort of thing. And I'm just wondering if this hack that happened in Minneapolis, MCA testing was suspended due to a cyber attack because they had a distributed denial of service attack. And I saw somebody tweet about this, and then somebody else tweeted and said, well, maybe the DDoS happened because somebody was also infiltrating the test system. And they wanted to hide the fact that they were in there.
That's what it sounds like to me. And I think it's statewide that the MCAs were postponed because of this this breach.
It's very
troublesome. And Pearson, who is the new vendor for this test, is really under the gun here, because many millions of dollars have been spent on this, and they haven't administered the test yet.
Yeah, right.
You know, and if it was a breach where the actual tests were taken, they're going to have to recreate those tests, which takes weeks or months to do, I would imagine.
Yeah, and we're basically out of time in the school year.
Right.
So. Oh my gosh.
And Pier, you know, trivia item, Pearson is also the company at the software level during that whole LA iPad fiasco. So at this point, I'm not having a whole lot of respect for Pearson. They seem to be somewhat incompetent.
Well, that whole story, the LA school district and Apple is in the middle of that right now, and it's millions of dollars and lots of iPads. So it's a big deal. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to refresh everybody, can you just refresh us on that LA school district issue? Because apparently it failed, and they're asking for their money back. Is that essentially the punchline?
Well, the LA school district bought billions of dollars worth of iPads to distribute, and that the whole arrangement tanked, you know, fairly quickly because it just wasn't implemented very well on the software level. There were security problems. It was complicated for the teachers who didn't know what to do with the things. So they would just set their iPads aside.
And at the core of it was Pearson.
And Pearson was at the very software core of this. Pearson, and there's a whole conversation to be had about, you know, someday iPads will be good educational tools because they're not just emulating, you know, print products. And Pearson is just, it hasn't gotten very far in that direction. But the whole thing was implemented so ineptly that it just collapsed under its own weight. And now, but now the LA School District is very absurdly demanding that Apple refund what it spent, which is, you know, it's not Apple's fault.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
We should say that Pearson, which is a UK-based company, has a fairly significant presence in Bloomington, but that's only part of the testing division. Is that true, Julio?
I don't know. I don't know Pearson intimately, but yes, I believe we're talking about somewhat different silos here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a big, huge company, but yeah,
so like Samsung, you know, having different divisions and so forth. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they made an acquisition locally several years ago that was a testing company that I can't recall the name of right now. But I actually know a product manager at the Pearson facility in Bloomington. I have no idea whether they're directly involved with this MCA thing. You would think they would be, though, since that's about testing. But I know, doesn't Pearson do like IT certification testing and stuff like that, which has nothing to do with K through 12, obviously. So
yeah, well, they're a I think they're solely focused on higher and professional education, and then they have that whole K-12 division. So I think their primary focus is on education, but I'll look for some links.
Yeah,
because they do publishing too and assessments.
Oh,
and
yeah, a bunch of other crap, so. And I don't know that the K-12 has any Minnesota people. I don't know that that's part of
Bloomington. They actually do.
Do they?
Yeah. Okay. Well, my buddy Eric Johnson, you know, who used to run 13 states for Apple, spent a lot of time at the Bloomington facility.
Oh, okay.
Which I think now is in Eden Prairie, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they have the building right at 494 and 100, or they have a big chunk of it.
Yep, the name is up
on the side of the building, one of those newer
buildings
there. They may be in Eden Prairie as well. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But
well, speaking of software companies and all of that, I don't know who put this story in here. Maybe I did. I don't even remember. No, I did. Did you?
I did.
So Neil St. Anthony wrote an article in the business section about a Danish computer scientist who found love and business in the Twin Cities. So he was in Denmark. He was in Copenhagen at a firm called Site Improve, and he moved to the Twin Cities to woo a Minnesota woman he'd met in a Copenhagen bar. Now, she must have really made an impression on him. Of course, I can't, you know, all women in Minnesota are like that. Anyway.
Absolutely.
But
and what they didn't say in the story is she left an prototype iPhone there too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But anyway, so the guy goes to his company to resign, and they say no. Just you know, go there and open up an office, and we don't want to lose you, and so on. And now he's got 10 people.
Yeah. Good story, because at the end of it, he says that, you know, it was happenstance that he came here as opposed to San Francisco or New York or, you know, some other bigger city, and that the talent pool is great here, and, you know, they like it, and, you know, it's the costs are lower and all that. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a heartwarming, good story.
It was. I liked it a lot. Thanks for putting it in.
It's got that Scandinavian thing going on, too, you know? You can't beat that.
Well, he probably felt at home. You know, he could go out into the fir trees in the winter and pretend like he was back there. And
you'll recall that Garrison Keillor did the opposite. He went he you know, followed love to Scandinavia, and that didn't work out. So hopefully this story will lend better.
Yeah. Well, isn't it? Yeah. His wife's from Denmark. Garrison Keillor's wife, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which one? The most. Yeah, he bailed on one and moved to New York, didn't he, or something?
Yeah, I believe that's the wife that he moved to Scandinavia to be with, and if I recall correctly, that that relationship did not last.
Oh, so. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about this Minnesota related, but we're also going to talk about it in our other top stories. But this was arguably one of the biggest stories of the entire week, which was Comcast, who had been pursuing that Time Warner Cable deal against a lot of opposition, decided to pull out, and that's it. They're done with it. And Al Franken, our senator, really was one of the rabble rousers against doing the deal. And it was all about broadband dominance and having too much of it and all of that. And one of the things that didn't really come out in this, and I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but one of the things that didn't come out was the fact that at virtually every cable head end that Comcast has, they have massive server farms. And so they've been gearing up for a really long time to be able to store and deliver video. And so, I mean, because they know, everybody knows that eventually, you know, terrestrial television will wane and on demand will be there, and people are going to want stuff served quickly, and they're going to have to manage their network and all of that. And I think it would be a really great service to have rather than to go with an Akamai or somebody to serve up all your stuff close to where people are watching it.
And they've already been testing. They already in a couple of isolated markets, they in fact have already been testing a product where where your DVR basically is no longer mechanical, it's in the cloud. So if you DVR program, you can access it from any device, which is great because right now if I use my X1 gear at home to DVR something, it's just on the box in the living room. And if my wife is watching something else,
yeah,
then I'm kind of screwed. I'd love to have access to that DVR library from any device. And Comcast has, in fact, in some markets deployed a product that lets you do exactly that. What hasn't happened, and this is kind of an old story, it's happened again and again. They announce something, they tell me about it, they point to other markets where it's testing, and I get really excited, you know, and 3 years pass and it never rolls out here. Right. So I don't know what the story with that is.
Well, Tim, do you use your TiVo for Xfinity On Demand?
I don't have Comcast here. We're in Charter
land. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I totally lost my head there for a minute.
So the answer is no. and the TiVo does not work with Charters, even though I have a cable card in it. And it uses the Charter cable network to get the programming. The on-demand doesn't work.
Oh, interesting.
There's no on-demand for Charter. I know that Comcast, though.
I'm using it, and they just rolled it out.
Yeah, so they have their own firmware for the TiVo. So
yeah,
so well, they've added that. Does that show up as an app on the TiVo?
No, it's one of the, you know, you got to go through a menu system, so you got to go two or three deep, and then you can get into it. But because the frustrating thing is on my iPad, for example, I've got Xfinity TV Go, and you can go in there, and there's all kinds of fabulous programming, but I've got to push it through AirPlay to my Apple TV, and no matter what, at some point, if it starts to have to buffer for any length of time, it'll just drop the signal. And then you got to reestablish it. And then sometimes I have to fast forward back to where we were. And it's just not a good experience. So I was just curious about that. But there's a lot of options, as you know, Julio, right? I mean,
Well, if my wife is watching something that we DVR'd, I just go and watch and look for the episode with Comcast On Demand, which is great. You know, I have almost 100% luck finding what I want. The problem is, you know, having to sit through the commercials and not being able to fast forward and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the DVR option is vastly superior because they have full control over it. It's just not in the cloud. And Comcast has repeatedly, you know, at cable conferences and so forth, has repeatedly said that's where they're going. And they've demoed prototypes and so forth. There's an X2 platform that is supposed to be in the works. But the maddening thing with Comcast is they talk a big game about where they're heading, but you know, a lot of the things they discuss never seem to come to fruition.
Well, you know, it's I'm just wondering if anybody knows somebody at Google that could say that they're going to do fiber everywhere in the Twin Cities, so that Comcast would immediately up their speeds, you know, double, triple their speeds, because you know, in some markets where they're competing now with Google, they've gone to 2 gigabit per second symmetrical through the coax. And boy, would I love that speed. Yeah.
Which they said they couldn't do and nobody wanted it anyway.
Well, but no, but the DOCSIS, I mean, if you follow DOCSIS and the DOCSIS 3 direction, just like Tim, like you said last week, there's a lot of headroom left in that coax cable.
Yep.
A lot of speed, because, you know, I mean, look at all the stuff that the Bell operating companies are trying to do with copper and squeeze as much as they can through copper wire, because it's everywhere. And boy, if you can do that, imagine what you could do if you got a big pipe like a cable, coax cable. That'd
yep.
be pretty great.
So I think you're going to get your 2 gig service at some point in the future, Steve.
I hope so. I really do.
Because anyway, we're still sitting here twiddling our thumbs waiting for CenturyLink to roll out their 1 gig. So
yeah, well, yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, I don't think we need to dive too much and more into the Comcast stuff.
Are you gonna do your mompreneur story?
I don't know who put that in here.
I did, because I wrote it.
Oh, yeah.
The lady, Carla Lemon, who won the startup pitch competition at MobCon back in November, launched her app and actually launched a crowdfunding campaign as well. The app's called Little Peanut on the Go. It's a parenting app that does a lot of cool things for when you're traveling with your kids and how you plan everything, or if you leave them behind with the grandparents. And it's a pretty cool app. She's quite the entrepreneur. She's been at Honeywell as a product manager in various positions for about 12 years. But by golly, she launched off on her own and, you know, had some winnings from the MobCon competition. And now she's out there in the world of entrepreneurship and launched on a crowdfunding campaign on a platform I had never heard of called Plum Alley, which is for women. It's for women startups and projects and new products. So it's an interesting story. She, you know, really seems to have her act together. So it's up there on Minovate. For all who want to, I've been doing so many stories about women entrepreneurs and women angels lately. I feel like I'm becoming specialized.
Well, maybe you are.
Well, I don't know. At least I have for the last few stories here. Well, you know, about Technovation Minnesota and, you know, the teenage girls doing their mobile apps. And then I did a piece on the Sophia Fund, the Women Angel Group. So anyway, I've sort of been on a run here lately.
Whatever happened to that conference that was going on in the Twin Cities, the Mommy Blogger one?
Was there a Mommy Blogger thing going on here? I don't know if I knew about that.
There was, doggone it. Do you remember, Julio? It was part of the Minnesota Blogger, an extension of the Minnesota Blogger Conference.
Sounds vaguely familiar. Right?
Yeah, it was over in St. Paul, but they only held one, which sort of surprised me.
Yeah, well, maybe it's not that big of a thing here locally, but mommy blogging is a huge frickin' industry. I mean,
tell me about it.
Oh my gosh, it's, you know, I read stories not recently about how they get flown all over the world by the, you know, these big companies that want to court, you know, these bloggers to write about their products, you know, P&G and, you know, the big consumer products companies just love these mommy bloggers. So, you know, I'm sure that Carla, the founder of Little Peanut on the Go, and she's got a company named too, I'm sure she's going to be all over the mommy blog app because it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Although I want to think pegging a local conference to mommy blogging might be a mistake because it strikes me as too narrow. Because I just off the top of my head, I can think of 20 fantastic, incredibly good local bloggers that happen to be women, but just have other specialties. Like my next door neighbor is a very good food blogger, for instance. And I think they broaden the focus a little bit. That would be more effective.
Yeah. Maybe that's why it didn't carry on beyond one event. You know, I'm sure there's a national mommy blogger event that's huge, but they don't do it here, obviously.
Yeah, there is one. I mean, it's we actually have, because of our work in the color space with home furnishings that my wife does for Trends in Home Furnishings. We have a lot of quote unquote mommy bloggers who follow what she does and follow her Instagram and Twitter feeds and all of that, and they write like mad about what's coming. And I got to tell you, there was one woman who I went to her site and she had all these ads all over the site. And I ended up sending her an email and saying, you know, how is that a pretty lucrative business for you? I'm just kind of curious because we're, you know, we don't take any advertising. We're editorial only and blah, blah, blah. And she said, well, I had a very good job at a shall remain nameless corporation, top five Fortune 500. And she quit her job because she was making more on the ads off the blog than she was working.
Yep.
And so, you know, you figure if she's making 60, 70K a year, that's not bad if you can replace that.
Yeah, sure. I'd be hard-pressed to think of another category of blogging that has been as successful for individual independent bloggers than mommy blogging. I mean, yeah, tech blogs, you know, in general, but that's sort of a broad category.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, guys like Richard McManus started Read Write Web, and he did okay, I guess, you know, but, and others have done that in the tech space, but mommy bloggers, there's a lot of them, and there's a lot of them that are making darn good money. So,
yeah,
go
so
girls.
What are we doing? What are we doing, guys? We got to. Do something here with the podcast, but
well, we could do the Bruce Jenner thing and become no we don't want to do that.
Well, no, actually I'm really
grandma blogging. Yeah, there
I'm
go.
Really sensitive to that. There was a buddy of mine from high school who was one of the most handsome guys you'd ever want to see, burly and all of that, and pilot for Northwest and yada yada yada, and he was transgender and didn't know this. I mean, he knew it since he was a kid, but now he's a tall, statuesque blonde.
Wow.
She is, and has had sex reassignment surgery and everything else, and it was something that I had to really, you know, dig through and think through and all of that, because, you know, he was one of my best friends in high school, and I never knew.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that, you know, I try to be sensitive to everybody, and yet I just had no clue, which was, I suppose nobody ever does really. But anyway, speaking of no clue, I wonder about Google's new project. Is it Phi or Phi?
Phi.
It's Phi. That they're going, they're a mobile virtual network operator, an MVNO. And so they're buying up time from Sprint and T-Mobile, and they've rolled out and announced this new mobile network service. And do you guys think this is going to get any traction?
It's highly experimental because it's just on one phone. So it's one of those things that Google's kind of throwing against the wall to see what happens. But I find it fascinating on several levels, one of which is the fact that if you're using it, you are, if I, as I understand it, you are in fact using both T-Mobile and Sprint, because the device sort of looks for, you know, for the right access, a Wi-Fi, T-Mobile, or Sprint. So you're actually a customer of both carriers, which I find interesting. I actually, T-Mobile is working to get me a phone, a Nexus 6 that has the SIM, so that I can play with it, because I'm curious how well it works. But based on the coverage map, you can do that here in the Twin Cities. How well it will work is going to be an interesting question, because I've always had somewhat iffy service with T-Mobile and especially Sprint, which is why I would not do anything other than AT&T or Verizon if it were coming out of my pocket. But this is something I'm very interested in trying myself, because it's a very interesting experiment.
It's supposed to be putting pressure on the major carriers, you know, from a cost standpoint. So any competition is good in that respect. I saw one reporter tweet about comparing what he'd pay on that versus AT&T, though, and he said, it's about the same. Why would I switch, you know?
Yeah, it depends on how much data you use. If you're right. Like most people, they don't use, you know, most people don't use a lot of data. So if you're one of those, then you'll actually pay less. But if you're a heavy data user, then it's about the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, in my household, we were having that conversation about whether we want to ditch our Comcast-based landline and go cell phone only. And we would not, absolutely not, go with a contract. So I was pricing out prepaid AT&T service. And I found, you know, some reasonably good options out there, reasonably priced from my standpoint. And I'm not finding this Project Fi to be cheaper than those options. It's somewhat competitive, but it's not a huge deal compared to some of the other things I've seen out there. So I don't think it's gonna revolutionize the industry from the cost standpoint. But the way technologically is very interesting.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see. I'm not so sold. I'm not just not sure that this is going to take off. But we'll see.
Yep.
Well,
and you have to use the Nexus 6, which is god awfully big phone. I just couldn't handle it. It's even bigger than the 6 Plus.
I haven't held one. I'm sure you have, right?
No, it's a phone that's even bigger than the iPhone 6 Plus, and that is kind of pushing it for me size-wise. The Nexus 6, I can't handle it. If I were in a case, it would just be impossible. So that it's gonna drastically limit the appeal of the service initially.
Well, I'm sure that they'll add new phones as phones come out. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
So.
Oh, man. Well. Yeah, so this past week, too, speaking of phones and issues, 1,500 iOS apps have a serious security flaw.
Yeah.
And there's an open source code library that allows developers to drop networking capabilities into their apps. And so it allows man-in-the-middle attacks that could give hackers access to data encrypted by HTTPS. But This goes back to the whole thing about choosing your Wi-Fi hotspot carefully. You know, so if you're in a coffee shop, if you're in a Caribou and you see Caribou and Caribou Secure, and then you see Caribou Guest Network, you probably don't want to connect to Caribou Guest Network. That's probably some guy's laptop.
Oh, yeah.
and it's hard to know, though. I mean, most people don't even know. And then once you connect... Then every time that SSID comes up SSID comes up, your machine's just going to automatically connect to it. So I'm not sure that this is that huge, but boy, for a lot of people, we've got to lock it all down, right? I don't know.
Yep.
We'll see. We'll keep an eye open. And when we get to my security tip, I'm not going to talk about that, but just keep that in mind when we talk about the security tip. But what we need to segue into is something my wife and I went to Mall of America and went to the Apple Store night before last, and we didn't get to try them on like you did, Julio, but we did get to gaze at them, and they have a couple of demo stations set up, and there wasn't really anybody hovering around them. So the store manager actually was there, Heidi, and we were able to have her walk us through some stuff. So that was kind of cool.
She wouldn't let you try anything on.
No, no, they
had to have an appointment.
Yeah,
I was going to say they're really that strict, even though they didn't have people there at the time.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they were. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
Well, that's a store by store thing. I hear many stories of people just walking in. In fact, Apple says on its site, you may be able to have a try on if things are slow in the store. So if they weren't letting you try on without an appointment, that's kind of silly.
Well, maybe I did because I didn't really ask and push it. But here's the thing. So Graham, you sent me an email about, hey, did you, maybe we'll get our watches early.
I thought you might luck out and get yours yesterday morning or this morning, but obviously you didn't.
Well, here's the punchline. And this was confirmed by a couple of different people at that Apple store. Because I asked, I said, so, hey, some people are getting notified early, blah, blah, blah. And this guy says, oh, yeah. Well, it's on the white one. And he points at the white one with a white sport. And my wife says,
God.
Well, I guess that's now we know which one's not the hot seller. Yeah. And he kind of looked and he went, yeah, probably.
It's on the white one.
Yeah. So
it's really silver. It's not white.
No, there's the white band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 So that was the least. So, I mean, can you imagine how filthy that thing would get?
Oh, sure.
I mean, it would just be incredible. So, but Julio, you got to try them on, right?
Yeah, I was working on a story for Tidbits. And so I actually went the extra mile and very exhaustively set up a total of 5 appointments at 4 local stores.
Oh,
wow. Excluding
Ridgedale, just to learn as much as I could. So I didn't want to overtax any specific store, so I spread out my experiment geographically. But it was a lot of fun because the guys who ran the fitting, the employees, they were all great. Retail employees, get a bad rap sometimes. But if these guys who were helping me try on the watches weren't having fun, they were excellent actors. They were fantastic. And it's a fun little thing to do because they have these secret drawers built into the tables, and they have this little RFID chip on their phones, and they tap against the drawer to open it, and then you open the secret drawer and all the watches are laid out in their little compartments. Each little compartment has its own charger, and you can try anything you want, and it's like going to a jewelry store and trying on rings and things. It's that sort of an experience, which is sort of alien to me because I don't really care about jewelry, but it's a similar kind of thing where you feel a little pampered, and it's a lot of fun. And I brought a buddy and he took pictures, but that gets back to what I'm saying about the experience sort of varying from store to store, because Erica Hanna, who we talked about earlier, she tried to Periscope her session, and they initially said fine, but apparently a manager freaked out and came over and put his or her hand over Erica's camera and demanded that this cease immediately. And that's one example. And I wanted to try on a sport watch with some of the other bands, to have some little swapping. Maybe put the Milanese Loop on the sport, on the cheap sport watch, which mechanically is perfectly doable, and people in other stores have done that. It hasn't been a problem, but my request was summarily denied. You never really know 100% what's going to happen when you go through one of these experiences, because it is largely at the mercy of whoever's doing it and whoever that person's boss is.
So did you get to try a Milanese Loop band at all?
Yeah, no, I tried all the bands.
What did you think of the Milanese Loop? Because I almost went for that.
The try-on experiences were very useful for me because they basically blew out of the water a number of my preconceptions. Like I was certain I would hate the larger watch because I have small wrists.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up absolutely loathing the 38. I have to go 42. I was a little apprehensive about the sport band. I thought it would be plastically and cheap feeling. And it's easily the most comfortable of all the watch bands. Mm. And the Milanese Loop, I was sure I would hate it. I thought it would be very girly. I loved it. It's great. The mental trick a dude has to do when wearing that watch band is just think of it as chainmail, and you're done.
And again. Think what?
Think of it as chainmail.
Yeah.
Think of yourself as a knight. No, but it. But I'm joking. It's easily one of my favorite bands. I didn't like any of the the ones that has the big round buckle on the underside. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but that Milanese is kind of pricey, isn't it? Is it like $150 or even more if you buy it as an add-on? I think it is.
It's expensive, but it's very nicely done. And the one leather band that I like, which has sort of the ridge design, I like that because it has sort of a 2001 Space Odyssey kind of a vibe to it.
There you go.
Well, have you guys spent any time trolling through the Apple Watch App Store? I did after I saw the Wall Street Journal article come out and just started going through and looking at some of it. But they're highlighting some apps and I look at some of these and I think, well, you know, some of them are going to be nice. I mean, for me anyway, getting notifications on my wrist is going to be a big, big help, or text messages specifically. But you know, a lot of stuff I'm like, man, oh man, I'm even thinking about an iPhone 6 Plus, or whatever, 6S Plus, whatever comes out this fall, because I want the larger size. I'm not sure I want to go small. I don't know. It's just going to be really interesting to see what happens when we get our hands on these things. And
well, so Julio, do you think that this Apple Watch is really going to be, you know, a hit? Like the iPad or the iPhone or the iPod was, or do you think it's going to be an accessory to the iPhone that will have a market but it won't be a big deal?
It's a very interesting question. Apple Watch is obviously hit right out of the gate because all the Apple fanboys are scrambling for it. The crucial question is whether it will maintain this momentum year after year going forward. And I have some doubts about that because this strikes me as one of those products which is a nice to have, but not a gotta have. I think there's a real danger for Apple that this is gonna start petering out. Exactly, I'm making an analogy here. Exactly as this is happening to the iPad. The iPad was a huge hit for several years. But then a lot of people sort of woke up and said, hey, I have a phone, I have a computer, iPad's kind of nice, but do I really, really need this thing? Do I really want to buy this? And the iPad market, the tablet market as a whole is tanking at this point. And I think Apple realizes that, which is why it's pushing the Apple Watch very, very, very hard. And a couple of things need to happen. I think the Apple Watch is not going to maintain its momentum if it remains so ungodly expensive, because Apple is basically putting people in a position of having to buy, they have to buy a computer, they have to buy a phone, they have to buy a tablet, they have to buy a watch. If they don't buy all four of those, well, gosh, you're not a true Apple fan. And it households like mine that are, somewhat on a budget, it just starts getting a little ridiculous, which is why an Apple Watch is just a frill for me right now, because I'm replacing Macs in my household. So I have to choose between buying a Mac that I really need or this piece of tech jewelry, which is highly, highly optional.
Yeah.
And I'm looking 3, 4, 5 years down there where we may get to the point where the Apple Watch is going to be exactly in the position that the iPad is now, where people are realizing, now, that was kind of stupid. I don't really need this thing. But I'm not Nostradamus. I don't know if that's going to come to pass, but I think there's a high probability that that will happen unless the Apple Watch gets crazy cheap in the near future, because it's very expensive.
Well, the upgrade cycle too, I don't think it's going to be like one of the things that, you know, that you're going to want to upgrade every year either. So once you have it, you sort of have it.
That's the big thing for me.
I would disagree with that.
Oh, really?
Really? Because so that's what it is for me is I've got an iPad mini Retina, and there's really not a really dramatically compelling reason for me to upgrade right now. Yeah, it'd be nice to have Touch ID on it like I do on my iPhone, but it's not like, oh my God, I got to go get one like I did with the iPhone.
Yeah, well, the phone is sort of a mission critical thing, and there are benefits to upgrading every year. You know, the faster processor, better camera, all that stuff. There's really none of those benefits to the iPad or to the Apple Watch.
I want to disagree with that a bit because I think there's going to be this pressure thing where if you're walking down the street and you have an older model Apple Watch on your wrist, you're just going to look and feel like a loser. Apple is going to subtly push that. And so there is going to be societal and Apple directed pressure to upgrade. And that's another reason I think, you know, 3-4 years down the road, I think there may be a backlash or rebellion, and fewer people will start to realize, you know, why am I enslaved to this upgrade cycle when I don't even need this stupid thing anyway? I'm just going to buy a Pebble.
So, like, in 5 years, I can't ironically wear a first-generation Apple Watch?
Well, 10 years on the road, yeah, you'll be sort of retro cool.
Yeah, and you can play your LP albums on your record player with your Apple Watch.
Well, and if you're ashamed of your appearance of your watch, you know, there's always long sleeves and jackets, you know.
That's right.
But, you know, I'm of the opinion of Jim Cramer. You know who Jim Cramer is? TheStreet.com?
Yeah.
His take on it in a tweet yesterday was, developers will make this a must-own. It is a vessel that brilliant people will pour genius into. And I agree. We, you know, the first chapter of this hasn't even been written yet. You know, it really hasn't. The apps that are out there were created without even having a watch to test them on. So, yeah. You know, we're really just at the starting line here. And I think a lot of really cool stuff is coming in the way of what you can do with this thing, you know. And there have been some good articles out already about the apps that are available and some of the cool things you can do, you know, like, hey, advance your slides with PowerPoint, you know, or use the Shazam app to instantly find out what that song is, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, I think it's time we unleash the beasts.
Oh, for this?
Open that barn door.
It is time for Steve's security tip of the week.
No horses.
It was the chipmunks. Sorry.
Boing.
Well, okay. So here's my security tip of the week. It's one word: update. In the last week, I've had one client that had a website, a WordPress website that had not been updated, either WordPress itself or at the time 17 plugins, and it got hacked because somebody got in from one of the vulnerable plugins. And it also hacked over to, they were able to do cross-site scripting and get into the other domain that they had. And thank God they only had one other one. So they hired us to clean it up. But another relative of mine had an outdated Flash instance running in Windows 7, and they got ransomware installed on their machine. So this is the second relative that has had ransomware put on a machine in the last, I don't know, 3 months. So they had to get paid, or they had to pay and to get the thing unlocked and try to get it backed up. But, at any rate, right now, just this past week, there are critical updates for Windows, Flash, and Java. So make sure you run those updates, specifically Flash. If you don't need Java, just don't install it or take it off. There are security updates for several Apple products like the Apple TV and OS X Yosemite and Safari and so on. And then Securi, which is a big security company, has a security advisory on a cross-site scripting XSS vulnerability affecting over a dozen WordPress plugins. And so, again, somebody can get in. They can not only get malware in your current WordPress instance, but any others that you have running on your server, and just update your dancing. Keep it updated. That's my tip.
Very good. Yeah. I love it.
You could also not use Windows Flash or Java.
That's
your other alternative.
Sure.
You can run a Windows-free environment like we do here at the Thickens household.
Yeah, or just disconnect totally from the internet.
Yes, from the internet, which is another problem we're having at the Thickens household. But I won't go there.
Yeah. Well, let's. We got to move here, kids, because we're almost at the end, and we've got to talk about our cool things of the week. And Graham, let's start with you this week. What's your cool thing of the week?
Okay, well, it's how to clean up your messy Android or iPhone contacts. A great article by Joanna Stern in the Wall Street Journal pointing out a couple of great apps that will help you get rid of all those God-blessed duplicates. Like when I go to Steve Borsch, I got like 5 or 10 contacts for Steve. You know, it's like, why? You know, I don't have the time to go through these one at a time, but there are automated ways to fix this problem. And so take a look at that article check out one called the Deep Cleanse or another one called the Quick Cleanup, and get your contacts cleaned up.
All right.
So that's mine.
All right. Tim.
Although I'll add that if you're in Gmail, the Gmail itself, Google Contacts itself has a pretty good deduping feature.
Oh,
they
nice.
Do, especially the new version that just rolled out too.
Yeah.
On the the online version, the web based version.
Right.
Oh, yeah, nice. I believe she mentions that in her article too.
Okay.
Great.
Is it my turn?
It's your turn, then Julio, and then I'll go last.
Sorry. Is it Tim's turn or my turn?
I think it was my turn. So Josh Topolsky, who you remember from Engadget and The Verge, is now at Bloomberg, and he's been not podcasting for over a year, but he just started a new podcast called Tomorrow.
Oh.
And he's got a couple of episodes up, and it's decidedly different than the podcasts that he has done before. Although there's still a little bit of the irreverent kind of tinge to it, but he seems much more serious. And it's very interesting, and I recommend that you check it out. It's not all tech focused, but it's kind of tech culture, and what he tried to do with the Vergecast, but got unfortunately out of control with the group. He basically brings in one person to interview them per week, kind of talk show style, John Gruber's podcast, but talking not about technology news, talking about the way it affects our culture and the way that we live. So Tomorrow, it's on iTunes and all the other podcasting directories. So
and
check
it's
it
audio.
Out. It's audio only.
Okay.
And it's good quality. Different from other podcasts where Skype is often used, he brings people into his studio in New York and records with them one-on-one, which I think is a good idea and interesting.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'd love to fly people here and look at how hard it is for us just to find time to get together just in the Twin Cities, and we all live here.
Yeah.
So
true.
Yeah.
He's got some bucks to do his thing.
Yeah. All right. So Julio, you're up.
Well, I have a MacBook review unit from Apple, which I've been using for the past couple of weeks.
The new thin one.
I have the space gray version. And I've been using it as my daily driver, and I really like it. Much, much more than I expected. It's very compact, but the screen dimensions suddenly make the MacBook Air 11-inch look ridiculously narrow. So I love the screen proportions. I love the appearance. The keyboard, the newly designed keyboard, I like more than I expected. I hooked it up to a monitor and powered through a bunch of Final Cut projects, so it's faster than I expected.
Because that's how it's been. It's been one of the slams against it.
Well, yep. It's not the computer you're going to buy if you're a professional video editor by a long shot, especially since you can't hook up an external volume via Thunderbolt. For light Final Cut editing, it's perfectly serviceable. My basic point, it's a beautiful computer that is much less limited than the scuttlebutt would have you believe. A column I'm writing for Tibbet sort of argues it's the perfect computer that my parents would want to buy, so they can take on trips because it's very portable. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, so light. Oh my God.
Yeah.
When we were at the store the other night, I mean, I just was looking at that, and my wife had made a decision. There's no way she's going to upgrade to that machine because of all the dongles she'd have to have. She'd have to have two different dongles. And, but boy, both of us were looking at that thing and thinking, my God, could you imagine just having this thing to walk around with?
So yeah. Were they allowing you to buy one and walk out of the store with it as of yesterday?
I didn't even ask because.
No, I don't think that's possible yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but for what I do, it's way too underpowered. I could never choose that as my laptop.
So do you think that you can use it without the dongles and all the external hookup things for that one port?
Well, what I'm doing is I have the Apple charger in my backpack, and then when I get to the office, I just plug into the separate AV adapter that Apple sells, which lets me hook into a large monitor, you know, while also charging, and I have a spare USB port. So basically, I use it as when I'm mobile, it's basically iPad with a keyboard on it. Kind of a computer, and then when I get to the office, I jack in, and it becomes a full, you know, full desktop mm-hmm. productivity machine. And it's that has worked out pretty well. And you, since USB-C is an open standard, you can just use any USB-C charger that you might have handy. Like for instance, I'm playing with the new Chromebook Pixel from Google, and that is USB also, and its charger works. Beautifully with the MacBook. So I basically have one charger at the office and another charger in my bag, and I'm golden. It's perfect. But the USB-C port is going to be it's going to create a lot of complications for Mac geek type people that have very specialized needs, and you know, and they have a variety of peripherals that now don't work properly and so on and so forth. It's basically a non-issue for more average people like my parents, who they'll see this little hole and they say, oh, that's where you charge. And they won't even know that hole is good for other things like, you know, data transfer and external monitors and so forth, because that's not even part of their experience. And that's exactly where Apple is going with this computer. It's just sort of an everyman's computer for people that don't have very specialized, complicated needs like we do. It's not a computer for us. It's a computer for my parents. My mother just bought a Mac laptop, and if she were going to do it over again today, I suspect this is what she would have purchased.
Well, I was more impressed with it than I thought I would be, actually. But, well, we got to wrap up, guys. What are some upcoming events that we haven't talked about? I see SPS Commerce's influence is in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that starts Tuesday, big two-day, actually kind of two-and-a-half-day conference, attracting people nationally. I'm going to try to drop in over there Tuesday anyway at the Hyatt. And then Treehouse Health has an R&D tax credits event on the 29th in the afternoon. And what else got added here? Oh, how about this event that B-Swing is hosting called Whole View, a framework for overcoming innovation myopia. How's that for heavy stuff?
Yeah.
On May 5th, that was an event I became aware of this week. I believe it's a free event. I'm sure it is. And I think those are the only ones we added to what we had last week. But there is a bevy of good stuff coming up here in early May, late April, early May. So, get on out there and go to those events, especially the free ones with beer. You just can't beat that deal.
All right.
All right. So that's a wrap.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
All right. Yes,
take care.
Will.
Thanks, Julio.
Take it easy, guys.
Have a great weekend.
See you.